When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.
Good evening. It is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. It's a moment many Kingston residents have experienced more than once this winter. The snowplow finally clears your street and leaves a heavy ridge of snow across the end of your driveway. Councillor Ryan Boehm spoke to this issue in a motion he brought forward at Tuesday's City Council meeting.
We know that, you know, that the defeat you feel when you're done shoveling your driveway, especially after the winter we've just had, and that snowplow comes around the corner and you're like, yay, the snowplow. And then he goes by your driveway and leaves these massive chunks that you have no hope of clearing. And you're kind of like, yay, the snowplow.
Windrows created through municipal snowplowing operations are not only a nuisance, but can also present accessibility and service challenges for residents, particularly seniors, persons with disabilities, and households with limited capacity to remove heavy or compacted snow. Several other Ontario municipalities have implemented driveway windrow clearing programs using specialized equipment with a range of service models, eligibility criteria, and funding approaches. Boehm's motion, which received unanimous support from council, will have the city examine the possibility of implementing a similar driveway windrow clearing service in Kingston.
This is more just to explore what's the actual cost of having what other municipalities have, that extra little arm that comes down and essentially just pushes that, right? So it would push it into a bank. The technology exists. Other places around us do it, but we don't really understand what it would cost, how it would be implemented, and we're just lacking information. So realistically, this starts that conversation. It's going to give us the information, and then we'll be able to make better informed decisions going forward. I'm kind of in favor of it. I'd love to see this report come back. And realistically, we know that, you know, there's people with disabilities and accessibility issues. We know we have a large senior population. So, I mean, there's a lot of the community that's been asking for this quite some time. And when I started digging into it, realized there was a massive information gap on what the costs would actually be and how we could implement this. So that's basically what we're looking to have that conversation and get some better information on this.
Councillors around the horseshoe were supportive, citing what they've heard from their constituents on the issue over the years.
I have received a number of complaints from constituents who are predominantly senior citizens and concerns about accessibility. And so having seen this service been provided in other municipalities, I was more than happy to second the motion.
And I've also had some seniors like come in and approach me and contact me about, you know, it's like I've had to pay somebody three times today just to clear my driveway because the plow went by three times. And then, you know, and then it's like that the next day and then the next day. And then it ends up being where it's, you know, it's not an affordable thing to sustain. And I just think that this is really worth exploring because I think this is something that would really, the quality of life for the residents would be drastically improved, especially during the winter months and especially with the winter like we just had, so.
A lot of constituents in my district, they asked during the campaign and after the campaign why we cannot do this when other municipalities are doing. And I think it's very important when you wake up 6 o'clock in the morning, you want to go to work, and you just clean your driveway. And after 10 minutes, you went to get shower, change the clothes, you came back, and then it's like a 2 feet, 3 feet high again, the snow in your driveway. And sometime you early evening or late evening, you clean your driveway. In the morning, you came back and you see the pile up snow again, which is also frozen. And then you have to just do it, and it's take your time, and you are late from work, especially for the senior population in our city. It's very difficult. And I think it is a good idea to look into the information, and if we can implement, and that would be great for the people living in this country. It's a great service to provide them.
City staff will now prepare a report examining clearing service models and their applicability to Kingston. The report, expected by the end of the third quarter of 2026, will include a review of programs in comparable municipalities, along with an assessment of potential service delivery options for Kingston, including associated costs, operational implications, benefits, limitations, funding considerations, and impacts on the city's ability to meet minimum maintenance standards. Following on the heels of a motion discussing snow clearing, Councillor Connie Glenn brought forward another weather-related motion, this time focused on preparing for extreme heat.
So I know it seems a little extreme, we're going from snow to heat, but here we are, Canadian to the core.
Councillor Glenn introduced a motion directing staff to report back to Council on options for a residential air conditioning unit program aimed at supporting vulnerable residents with medical conditions in the city of Kingston. Staff will review best practices from cities such as Toronto and Hamilton, which have run programs providing free portable air conditioners to low-income residents with health-related conditions in the past. They will also consult with Southeast Public Health, which could help determine eligibility and manage funding distribution for residents to receive units. Glenn made the case for the motion, stressing the importance of preparation as summer temperatures continue to rise.
The reason for bringing this forward, I think we've made some significant steps forward in terms of providing cooling. However, we're still faced with individuals who suffer extreme circumstances in the heat. In 2018, a heat wave sent 13 people to the hospital. And this is something that we're likely to see continue if we don't provide help to those who cannot help themselves in this instance. So the motion is directed very specifically for people who cannot afford their own air conditioning units, for people who are challenged with medical conditions. Now what we're basically saying is, let's have staff and let's have public health go away and come back to us with a solid recommendation that would support the people most in need. So also coming out of our climate change adaptation plan, I note that there was mention of the vast increase in the number of days of 30 plus temperatures, and that this is a general upward trajectory. So this is not an issue that is going away. I want to note a couple of other things there too. July of 2024 was the warmest month on record so far. That wasn't that long ago. So we're not seeing a change in this overall pattern, and we know that it's only going to continue to get worse at the rate that we're seeing the change happen.
Heat response has been an ongoing conversation in council chambers. In winter 2025, council approved a motion establishing a maximum indoor temperature of 26 degrees Celsius for residential units equipped with air conditioning during the summer. However, that motion was not extended to units without air conditioning already installed, due to pushback from property owners and concerns about the legality of such a requirement. While landlords in Ontario are required to provide heating, there is currently no similar obligation for cooling.
One of the things I do want to say, because this was brought up, this is not asking landlords to provide this. We understand the challenges with trying to mandate that. We're not about to turn around and do that at this point. This is just saying, for people who cannot do this for themselves, who are suffering from medical health conditions, let's put some sort of a solid program in place and support them, because really at the end of the day, what it's going to lead to is increased disability, increased numbers of people showing up at our ERs, and really this just speaks to the general well-being of our community, which I hope we're all concerned about.
The motion carried unanimously. Staff are expected to return to council with options by the end of April. A quick turnaround aimed at having a program in place for summer 2026. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. You were listening to your Queen's Campus Beat, Queen's Campus News, here on CFRC 101.9 FM or online at cfrc.ca. I'm Henry. the Alma Mater Society is undergoing a leadership transition following the resignation of AMS President Jonna Amer, whose resignation was accepted by the Assembly earlier this month and took effect on March 9th. The resignation came after controversy surrounding the use of the presidential corporate credit card and a proposed impeachment motion from faculty society presidents. At its March 10th assembly meeting, members voted unanimously to appoint Dryden George as interim AMS president. George had already been elected president during the 2026 AMS winter elections, where he won 51.2% of the vote, defeating candidate Alex MacArthur. The election saw a 16.1% voter turnout, with voting taking place from January 28th to January 30th. George currently serves as chair of the AMS Board of Directors, and Assembly has approved his interim appointment in order to maintain continuity in student government following Amer's departure. Under the current plan, George will step into the interim presidency on March 27th and lead the society for the remainder of the 2025-2026 executive term, which concludes on April 30th, before beginning his full elected term as president on May 1st. Speaking after the vote, George said the circumstances were not ideal, but that beginning the role earlier could help provide a smoother transition into the next academic year. Queen's University is currently gathering feedback from students about a potential change to the university timetable that could expand class scheduling into weekends and additional evening hours. According to a survey circulated in late February, the administration is considering extending teaching hours in order to better accommodate classroom shortages and enrollment pressures. The proposal has already sparked debate among students and faculty concerned about workload, commuting logistics, and the impact on extracurricular activities. The consultation process is part of a broader effort by the university to examine long-term scheduling flexibility and space constraints across campus. Administrators say the survey results will help determine whether the institution moves forward with any structural changes to the academic timetable. In government news, the university's Board of Trustees has also been discussing financial pressures affecting students. During the March 6th Board of Trustee meeting, held in Richardson Hall, trustees examined a range of student-related issues, including the impact of recent changes to the Ontario Student Assistance Program, or OSAP. The meeting also resulted in approval of an increase in residence fees, a decision that comes amid broader concerns about affordability for students across the province. Trustees emphasized the economic pressures and global instability are shaping the financial realities facing universities and students alike, and those themes dominated discussion throughout the March session. Turning now to campus events and student activism, a lecture addressing how universities navigate campus conflict was interrupted by demonstrators earlier this month. The event was organized by Queen's Center for Teaching and Learning and the Human Rights and Equity Office and opened with remarks by Principal Patrick Dean. During the opening portion of the lecture, protesters positioned themselves behind Dean and delivered their own remarks, drawing attention to ongoing tensions surrounding political expression and institutional responses to campus conflict. The incident reflects broader debates unfolding at universities across Canada and internationally over academic freedom, protest rights, and how institutions should respond to contentious political issues within campus spaces. I've been Henry with your Queen's Campus News here on CFRC 101.9 FM's Queen's Campus Beat.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. We begin with Monday, March 16th. Bit of a strange day weather-wise. Projected high of 12 degrees. Feeling closer to 6, with potentially 3 to 6 centimeters of snow falling overnight as conditions drop to about minus 8 for your overnight low. Tuesday, March 17th. Very chilly day here in the city of Kingston. Listed high of minus 5, but feeling closer to minus 17 with the wind chill. It's going to be a very cold St. Patrick's Day. Bundle up if you plan on participating in the festivities. Wednesday, March 18th, daytime high of minus 1, with a feel of actually above freezing, looking closer to 3 degrees. Thursday, March 19th, daytime high of 3 degrees, but it'll feel like -3 thanks to the showers in the forecast. Friday, March 20th, daytime high of 4, feeling closer to 6 with cloudy conditions and a 25% chance of precipitation. Saturday, March 21st, daytime high of 3 degrees, feeling closer to -6 with a mix of snow and rain in the forecast. Sunday, March 22nd, daytime high of 2 degrees, feeling closer to -5 with a mix of sun and cloud. And then starting off next week, Monday, March 23rd, daytime high of about 0, feeling closer to -3, but it will be sunny. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. As a reminder, overnight street parking restrictions have been eased as of March 1st. This means that overnight street parking is only banned when the weather conditions require it. In terms of road closures for the week, Aberdeen Street from Johnson to William is closed indefinitely to accommodate construction activity and staging in the area. The other major road closure for this week is Berry Street to Queen, which is closed indefinitely for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. That's it. That's all I have for you this week. This is Jesse Bell signing off and wishing you all safe travels.
How'd everyone's patties go?
I hope everyone made it out alive. Hello, hello, happy March break. It's your girl Gigi, CFRC's newest intern, and you're listening to What's Live at 5 on CFRC 101.9 FM. Coming up on this segment, I've got K-Town's hottest concert and event calendars for the week, starting with events. To kick off March break on Monday, March 16th, enjoy $6 March break movies at the Screening Room, showtimes between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. The lineup includes The Princess Diaries, The Wizard of Oz, Monsters, Inc., Mulan, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, The Last Unicorn, and Howl's Moving Castle. Kid snack combos are $6 plus tax for a small popcorn and juice box, which is a great deal, and take it from me because I used to work at Cineplex. There will also be sensory-friendly screenings of select films. At a fantastical March break, families are invited to step into a world where ancient beliefs about the natural world shaped early ideas about health and healing. Visitors will enjoy an exclusive first look at the museum's newly renovated children's gallery, featuring brand new hands-on interactives designed especially for young explorers. Check it out at the Museum of Healthcare from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Also, don't forget about Kingstonlicious at participating restaurants until March 31st at 10 p.m. Tuesday, March 17th, happy official St. Paddy's Day. Celebrate the official holiday at the Italo-Canadian Club of Kingston for St. Paddy's Day Pasta Night. Enjoy a generous buffet featuring unlimited pasta with rich house-made bolognese and a special green pesto sauce created just for the occasion. The bar will be open all evening with beverages available for purchase, including a signature green cocktail crafted just for St. Patrick's Day. Drop in between 4:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. Improv for seniors will also be happening at the Tet Center from 2 p.m. until 4:30 p.m. But if you're not a senior, not to worry. You can check out the Level 1 Improv class at the Tet Center from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. And lastly, swing by the open mic at Musiki Cafe and Whiskey Bar at 8 p.m. until 11 p.m. On Wednesday, March 18th, explore careers with impact. Align your path with the UN Sustainable Development Goals at Gordon Hall, Room 302 at 12 p.m. In this workshop, you will apply design thinking to plan the next steps in your career, paying particular attention to ways you can have social impact in your work through the UN SDG framework. Come prepared to brainstorm, experiment with ideas, and envision possibilities. Play some board games at Something in the Water Brewing Company anytime between 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Maybe you could try something new or meet new people. The Wonderful Women Community Choir will be gathering at Crossroads United Church at 1 p.m. until 3 p.m. No experience required and all ages welcome. Warm up your voice and head to karaoke at the Time Out Bar and Bistro at 6 p.m. But if you'd like to catch something a little later, swing by karaoke at the Mansion at 9 p.m. On Thursday, March 19th, looking to be a chemistry teacher or instructor? Check out STEAM Plus Brown Bag Seminar, a hybrid event, to investigate the ways in which chemistry education could be reimagined. For example, what is it like for a student to experience a chemistry laboratory learning environment? Or, how might prompting students to create their own representations of chemistry help them explore chemical concepts? Find out the answers at Duncan MacArthur Hall Education Library at 11 a.m. The challenges of Canadian healthcare system are multifactorial. The physician role in our healthcare system, with Dr. Lisa Tanuk, will focus on physician components of the complexities, including physician numbers, payment systems and structures, and practice features. Drop by at Robert Sutherland Hall, room 202 at 12 p.m. Looking for the secret to career happiness? Take a break with TED, The Secret to Career Happiness, an online workshop, employee-centered experience designed to help individuals explore what truly drives their sense of fulfillment at work. Through guided reflection and open dialogue, participants gain clarity on their strengths, values, motivations, and long-term aspirations. The session offers tools to build greater meaning, engagement, and satisfaction in their careers, no matter their role or stage of professional growth. This workshop is ideal for employees at any level who want to better understand their career aspirations, refresh their energy at work, or build a stronger sense of purpose and joy in their professional life. Join Thursday at 1 p.m. Friday, March 20th marks the beginning of the weekend. Enjoy the open mic at Storrington Lions Club Hall at 5:30 p.m. Or if you're looking for a later option, swing by the open mic at the Grad Club at 7 p.m. Lastly, bring your beautiful voices to Friday Night Karaoke at The Buckle at 9 p.m. Don't forget those cowboy shoes. On Saturday, March 21st, Sweet Surrender, a comedy by Matthew McKeever, will take place at the Domino Theater, the Davies Foundation Auditorium, at 2 p.m. To end off the week on Sunday, March 22nd, educate yourself at Stop Taking Me Off, a session to learn about why the winter season is essential to the tick life cycle and how climate change impacts our winters and affects tick biology. You'll come away with tools and techniques to protect yourself and your pets during your next outdoor adventure. Join at Elbow Lake Environmental Education Center, Main Pavilion, at 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. The Queen's Dance Club will be hosting their year-end recital, All of the Stars, at the Kingston Grand Theatre Rosen Auditorium at 2 p.m. and at 7 p.m. Grab your tickets before they sell out. Swing by the Memorial Centre Farmers Market at the Kingston Memorial Centre grounds at 9 a.m. until 1 p.m. for fresh foods and to show your support to local vendors. And, of course, swing by Sunday Fun Day for fun activities at the Great Lakes Museum at 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. Have an event you would like to add to our online and on-air event calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca or at CFRC Music on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. Next up, our concerts calendar. On Monday, March 16th, to kick off the music-filled week, we've got Canadian rock favorites, the Sheepdogs, hitting the stage at the Kingston Grand Theatre in the Rosen Auditorium. Showtime starts at 7:30 p.m. If jazz is more your thing, it's Jazz Monday, featuring Michael K. Myers and Rick Flanagan at the club at the RCHA, running 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. The live music continues with the Morning Doves performing at Musiki Cafe and Whiskey Bar from 8 p.m. until 11 p.m. And closing out the night, Rocket Surgery takes over the Toucan with their jazz and indie tunes from 9:30 p.m. all the way until 1 a.m. Tuesday, March 17th, for the St. Patrick's Day mood, we've got St. Paddy celebrations happening at the Coven with the Celtic Kitchen Party from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. At the Grand Theatre, catch Hands in Our Pockets starting at 7:30 p.m. Continuing with the St. Paddy's Day theme at my favorite, the Merchant Tap House, celebrate St. Paddy's with Doghouse and Andy Colonico, kicking things off at 8 p.m. Finally, to wrap up the night, we got Frank Ryan, a Dublin native, sharing his soulful rock music at, also my favorite, the Toucan, rocking from 9:30 p.m. until 1 a.m. Wednesday, March 18th, starting things off in the evening, Spencer Evans, who is a keyboardist, singer, entertainer, and clarinetist, is performing live at the Bank Gastro Bar from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. Next up, Christopher Jackson takes the stage at the Creekside Bar and Grill from 6 to 8 p.m. At 7:30 p.m., it's a big night at the Kingston Grand Theatre as William Prince and Boy Golden bring the Further From the Country tour to the Rosen Auditorium. And wrapping up the night, Nolan and Nick perform at Musiki Cafe and Whiskey Bar from 8 to 11 p.m. On Thursday, March 19th at 6 p.m., catch Mikhail Laxton for Original Thursdays at the Coven for a night full of folk, Americana, and R&B, while Donnie Cooper hits the stage at the Creekside Bar and Grill. Then, at 7:30 p.m., Daniel James McFadden and Kieran Campbell perform live at the Broom Factory. Lastly, Friendly Rich takes over the Toucan from 9:30 p.m. to 1 a.m. Friday, March 20th, kicking off the weekend early in the afternoon, it's Honky Tonk Happy Hour at the Time Out Bar and Bistro, kicking off at 3 p.m. The live music continues at 6, with Scott Owen filling the Creekside Bar and Grill with country vibes, and Wildcard hitting the stage at Time Out Bar and Bistro. At 7 p.m., Three's Company performs live at Spearhead Brewing Company, while the Crystal Shawanda band brings blues music to the Cove Inn. Then, keep the party going with Tone Cats at the Merchant Tap House at 10:30 p.m. If you're looking for some late-night eats and live music, we've also got Jukebox County hitting the stage at the Toucan at 11 p.m. until close. On Saturday, March 21st, we start the day nice and early with the 2026 Great Bach Marathon taking place at St. George's Cathedral from 12:30 to 4:30 p.m. I know that this is a beautiful program, so make sure to drop by. At 7:30 p.m., Canadian country star Tennille Townes performs at the Kingston Grand Theatre Rosen Auditorium, joined by Tara Lightfoot. At 8 p.m., Tyler Brett Forks performs at Something in the Water Brewing Company, while Break the Night hits the stage at Time Out Bar and Bistro. And to finish your night strong, Sweet Pea and the Heat, I love that name, perform at my other favorite place, the Toucan, starting at 10:30 p.m. On Sunday, March 22nd, the Juice Box After Party featuring Tiny Horse kicks off at 2 p.m. at the Broom Factory. Into the afternoon, Ricky and the J bring the Smooth Sundays vibes with smooth soul, jazz, R&B, and pop at Musiki Cafe and Whiskey Bar at 4 p.m., while Lady and the Tramps perform at Time Out Bar and Bistro. At 8 p.m., Kai Anto performs at Musiki Cafe and Whiskey Bar. And to finish off the weekend, Two Time and Doghouse take the stage at the Merchant Tap House starting at 9:30 p.m. Have an event you would like to add to our online and on-air event calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca or at cfrcmusic on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. No matter what you're into this week, music, food, dancing, or just pretending you have your life together, I've got you covered. For more details on all these events, check out cfrc.ca or lock in right here on CFRC 101.9 FM. You're listening to Gigi on CFRC Radio, and from me to you, have the best week ever, be safe, be kind, and I'll catch you next week.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a new single by Ethan Churchill called Big Bad Rose, a departure from the more intimate coffee house vibes of Ethan's 2022 Coffee Dates and Superstores. This single brings a raw, tongue-in-cheek rock and roll energy that just compels you to strut your stuff. And stay tuned, Ethan's new album, The Bloody Monster Club, drops January 30th. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Big Bad Rose by Ethan Churchill now on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Les Rendezvous de la Francophonie is underway. From now until March 31st, recharge your batteries Francophone style and enjoy shows, contests, local activities, and free film screenings. Check it all out on rvf.ca.
Les Rendezvous de la Francophonie are underway. From now until March 31st, recharge your batteries Francophone style and enjoy shows, contests, local activities, and free film screenings. Check it out on rvf.ca.
Le Rendezvous de la Francophonie is back for 2026. My name is Catherine Fisher, and I interviewed 8 Canadians for the Franco podcast. In this episode, I spoke with Héloïse Spelliers, the executive director of the Association Francophone de Kootenay-Ouest, or AFCO. Héloïse is from Belgium and now lives in the West Kootenay region of British Columbia. Héloïse spoke about the importance of being accent inclusive, some upcoming Rendezvous de la Francophonie events in Nelson, and the many local programs that AFCO offers Francophones and Francophiles in the rural region of the West Kootenays. Here is our conversation. Héloïse, you are the executive director of the Association des Francophones de Kootenay-Ouest in Interior British Columbia. Can you tell us more about AFCO and what it offers local Francophones and Francophiles?
Okay, AFCO, so the West Kootenay Francophone Association, or as you said in French, Association des Francophones de Kootenay-Ouest, is a non-profit, also a charity organization. We're based in Nelson, and we are trying to promote French language and its culture by organizing social, cultural, art activities. And we're trying to reach every Francophone and Francophile. So Francophile are people who are learning French toward, like, across the whole territory of the Kootenay-Ouest, which goes from Revelstoke, Creston, Caslow, Nelson, Rosslyn, Trail, Castlegar. Those are kind of the main centers that we're trying. So it's just a very, really big area. So we're really trying to engage people, or make people engage with the French culture and the language, either through like our library. We have a big library here in our community center based on Baker Street. Then we also have like a radio show, Kootenay Club Radio. We have French conversational class. Yeah, so that those are kind of like our service-based. We also have a group for activities aimed towards people age 50 years or plus that's very active, and we call Jeune de Coeur. And we try also to work with schools to promote and to, like, to create like a sense of community and also develop the sense of identity for people who are, or their mother tongue is French. So just for like a quick context, in Nelson there is 12% of the population that speaks French or that are, is able to have to sustain a conversation in French. In Rosslyn it's 15. So it's actually a lot, big numbers for like outside of the big cities such as Vancouver or Kelowna. We also have, we try to organize Les Petits Matins, which is storytelling in French. We have one in Castlegar, we have one in Creston, and we're looking to see, to do it also in Revelstoke. In Nelson, it's a bit on pause, on hold right now, but we're looking to find fundings and also where we can do it, because our community center cannot host everyone or all the time. So yeah, that's mainly what we do. So like we have lots of events, lots of activities, workshop, art. We try to bring Francophone artists from out east to come also perform here in the Kootenays, because that's also important for us, for arts, to just be able to bring a bit of Francophony in, like, French language in everyday life.
As you mentioned, this is a pretty broad area. How do you manage that?
So we definitely have our strategic planning, but that we're hoping to have a pied-à-terre in French, so like a base that we can have in each main big center. So let's say Creston, Revelstoke, Caslow, Castlegar. So we are definitely working on it. It's definitely one of our biggest challenge, I will say, of AFCO. That's why we try to like encourage Les Petits Matins, which is an initiative for like 0 to 5 years old kids and their family, French-speaking families, in other part of our area of interest is the word I'm looking for. It's aimed towards 0 to 5 years old, but really try to be like inclusive of everyone to come and to try to make it like intergenerational also. So that's like one way we do it. We have a project coming that we're hoping to get funded through Heritage Canada to have more of like a traveling camps that we will do, we'll be able to offer to the community in the summer in to join other Anglophone main events, such as, let's say, the Slocan Harmony Festival. We're trying to reach out. We used to have the Bibliobus that was really, really popular. So just some volunteers of AFCO were touring the whole Kootenay West to provide book exchange. But we, yeah, that was a really good project. And sadly, it had to stop. Yeah. We do our best. We do our best to cover the whole area of interest. I don't have like a one sentence answer for this, but we really try to help the volunteers who are in those centers for them to be able to empower the rest of the Francophone community to join their activities.
I remember seeing that you sometimes have events in different places too, like you have a sugar shack in one community or have a ski event in another community or something. So I guess that's another way to make sure that it's not just Nelson where your kind of base is that gets served.
Yeah, as you were saying, like we try to do our sugar shack at different spots. We have one in Salmo that we do, let's say it's our like main one, but this year we're looking to maybe do one in Revelstoke, and because as long as they have maple and the gear to do it, it's a very easy way to bring people in.
What does AFCO have planned for March for the RBF?
So for Le Rendezvous de la Francophonie, we're gonna welcome Mehdi Cayenne, which is an artist, who's an artist from out east. He's born in Alger. And he will do some workshop at both Francophone schools, so Les Sentiers Alpins et l'École Secondaire de Nelson, about workshop to promote either his, to tell about his story, about how to, he's had a very like immigration parkour, also immigration story to tell, but because he's born in the Middle East, where some countries also speak French. And so he's going to talk a bit about that. He's going to talk about developing your artistic side through like storytelling, through spoken word, through intuitive writing. And so he's going to do that with the school through the funding of Passeport. And we are trying to organize an event, like a public event, for him to be here for the community beginning of March. We haven't set up the date yet, but it'll be on our website really, really soon. So that's one thing we do through Les Rendezvous de la Francophonie. But as I'm sure you know, March is also the month of the Francophonie, so we have other events that we're trying to do on the other side of the Rendezvous de la Francophonie. We have our mini film festival, La Bobine, that we go do with the Capital on March 3rd and March 23rd. We are trying to bring like curated, really artsy movie to the public, just to create a bridge between Anglophone and Francophone also, through the art of cinema. So the 3rd will have Soleil et Camaref, and the 23rd will have Carnival. So we have that, and I forgot to mention, we're also hosting another viewing of a program from the ONF, so the National Office for Canadian Film, here at AFCO, also with the student of L'École Secondaire de Nelson. And we are going to show a program that's all about being engaged with the environment and how you can relate to the environment through an activism way. So that's what we have for Les Rendezvous de la Francophonie. We have, actually, I forgot to mention, we have two other events. We have a curling tournament that we do each year in Roslyn. That's really important for us to, as we mentioned before, to have one event in different communities. And that one is really for the community in Roslyn, because as I mentioned before, so there's quite a few people there speaking French, and we have one March 8th to celebrate Women's Rights International Day. Here at AFCO, where we have like a really busy program. March 8th, where we have Alexandra Pronovo, who's a really active member of a community who was just went through breast cancer, who's going to talk about that. We also have like Justine Garot-Loyer de La Ruelle Bakery, who's going to talk about the entrepreneurship of as a woman in a minority setting speaking French, that we're going to do focaccia with her. And then we have another workshop with Véronique Trudel, who's going to do something called Le Cercle des Mamans here at AFCO in the morning. And it's like compassion and really participative workshop to just for parents, for mom, to just come talk and hear about other mom situation with their kids and how we can maybe help each other by just active listening and maybe say, did you think about this? Did you think about that? And so that's March 8th for Women's Rights International Day here at AFCO.
What languages do you speak and how and why did you learn them?
So I speak French as my mother tongue. I speak English. I learned it through traveling. I live in the state for a year and a half doing my studies after high school, and then I went back to study part of my master degree. Just traveling through the state in New Zealand, Australia. I got very lucky as a teenager to be able to travel that, thanks to my parents. And I speak also Spanish that I learned through 2 years doing my university degree too. And then also traveling through South America. Actually, last year I was there. And I understand a bit of Dutch, sadly, because I wish I could speak more, because so as you may know, in Belgium, we speak both languages. We speak French in the south and Dutch, Flemish people call it also, in the north. And then we also have a bit of a German part. My mom, actually, her mother tongue is Dutch, but it never made it through for me to be able to totally speak Dutch. But I understand it really well, because half my family speaks Dutch.
And how did you end up in Nelson?
Yeah, well, I traveled in New Zealand for just a bit before COVID and met someone from Quebec there. And we did 2 seasons at Monhut in the South Island. And he really wanted to do a ski season also out west. And he said, do you want to come with me? And then I arrived a couple years later and never came. Never left, actually. So I arrived in Nelson, and then I never really lived anywhere else for the last 4 years, except traveling here and there or to visit back home in Europe. But yeah, so basically skiing brought me here, and then the community held me back.
The theme of the Rendezvous de la Francophonie this year is Activate Your Francophonie. How do you activate your Francophonie in everyday life?
For me, it's definitely a bit of awareness about making sure that everyone feels comfortable where they're at with their level, and just like creating a safe space and awareness also for like being accent inclusive. Like everyone, for us here at AFCO and also as me personally, it's really to not pick on anyone's accent, because I know I have a French accent and I like it, and it's part of my identity. And like French from Quebec also has an accent, and we either didn't speak French or either didn't speak English. So basically, as me, when I speak French too, I have my Belgian accent coming up. People say it's been mixing a bit with Quebec, but so really just to make sure that like we understand that everyone accent is part of their identity. And that's kind of how I try to go around in the world about being a Francophone speaker. So yeah, it's very definitely create a safe space. It's my way to activate my Francophone towards my English speaker friends, my learners, French learners, or just my French Francophone friends that I have a lot around the Kootenays.
Thank you so much for making the time for me today and everything.
Thank you so much for thinking about AFCO, and I'm glad we could have this chat this morning.
That was my conversation with Héloïse Spelios,
the executive director of the Association Francophone de Kootenay-Ouest, or AFCO. This has been the RVF Franco Podcast 2026. Thanks for tuning in. Le Rendezvous de la Francophonie is back for 2026. My name is Catherine Fisher, and I interviewed 8 Canadians for the Franco podcast. In this episode, I spoke with longtime community radio volunteer and former staff person Christiane Gagné. Christiane lives in Windsor, Ontario, and hosts a radio show called On y va at CJAM 99.1 FM. Christiane spoke about his experience at CJAM, his Métis and Francophone family background, and his quest to improve his French as an adult. Here is our conversation. Thank you very much, Christiane, for joining me. You've hosted a weekly French music radio show on the campus station CJAM in Windsor for some time, and you've done many other things in the community radio space. What brought you into community radio, and why have you stayed?
You know, I was just really into music when I was like about, 18, 19, 20 years old. And I thought one way of getting into music more was volunteering at the radio station. I had a roommate in residence that was a communications major, and he had decided to volunteer at CJAM because he thought it would be a good complement to his communications studies. I myself was a computer science major at the time, and I had no interest in radio or beyond listening to radio, of course. Well, I should never say I had no interest in radio. My God, radio was like my internet when I was that age. But I had no interest in like volunteering at a radio station or being a DJ or any of that kind of stuff. But I tagged along with him, and I met the station manager and the music director at the time, who was Mark Fettick. It was the first time I'd ever met Mark Fettick, who's been a dear friend of mine ever since. And my buddy volunteered. I did not at the time. But then, 7 or 8 years later, or 6 or 7 years later, I rented a room to this guy in this apartment I was living in, and he did a graveyard shift at CJAM, and he invited me to come and sit with him on the graveyard shift. And it led to me eventually doing my own graveyard shift, which eventually led to me doing some morning music shows. And eventually when I went back to university, I got a job through the work study program as an assistant music director, and then I got the job as a music director, and I did that for a lot of years. It was really a program director job because you handled all the music stuff and you handled all the music programming too. And then I did the station manager job for about 3 years, 3.5, almost 4 years. And then I decided to change careers. I think I had been involved in administratively in campus radio for too long, and I needed some change. So I went into, into the IT field. I went into computer, into fixing computers. And then around 2009, I was asked to come back and do a show again. And so I said, okay. And I came back and started doing a world music show again. And then they asked me to do, if I could do a French show. And I said, sure. And so I started doing a French show too. And so ever since then, that's been like, for sure 10 years at least now. I was trying to learn how to become bilingual. My father's Métis and French Canadian. And I grew up on a farm surrounded by people that spoke Quebecois French all the time, and went to French school till grade 3 too. And, but then my mom was English, and I lost whatever I learned in French school when I was a little kid. In my 30s, I decided I wanted to try to learn how to speak French better. And I went to teacher's college, and I went to Collège Boreal and took French courses. And I got to the point where I thought, well, geez, maybe if I did a French radio show, like my concept started becoming that the way, living in Windsor, there's not a lot of opportunities unless you're really forthright about it in practicing French and learning how to speak French. So I realized that one way of trying to at least keep what French I had learned so far and hopefully to ultimately improve upon it a little bit was to try to incorporate some activities in my life where I had to talk French. And so doing a French radio show once a week forced me to at least talk a little bit of French every week. And a radio show was a perfect laboratory or classroom for someone who's struggling to become conversational in French, because it's very basic in terms of the past. I just played this song, right? J'ai joué la chanson par Nirvana. My little bit of practicing a past tense, or, you know, voici une émission sur la station CGM 99.1 FM. You know, there's the present. And I'm going to play a song. Je vais jouer une chanson par Led Zeppelin. So there I am practicing a little bit of future tense too. So on a very basic level, doing a radio show allows me to practice a little bit of past, present, and future tense, and to try to continue to add a little bit to my vocabulary. Also, just practicing in the moment, trying to improvise language in a second language, you know, it forces you to do that a little bit too. So doing the French radio show has been a great way for me to at least keep what little French I have and perhaps add a tiny little bit to it. French is such a difficult language for me, even though I was raised by French people and everything. My brain is completely English in the way it operates grammatically.
It's really interesting to me that you have such a commitment to learning French.
You know, again, it's part of an act of nostalgia in a sense, and a turn to at least portion of my roots. I'm a very Canadian person. My families have been here for a long, long time, so that's why I'm part Native American. One of my ancestors was a voyageur that settled with Cadillac in Fort Pontchartrain when they founded Detroit in 1700. His son married a Native woman, was translator for the British for 30 years. My great-grandmother was pure Native person that was from here. But these Native people spoke French. They were French Catholics. They had been converted by the Black Robes in the 17th century. So while they were Native people, they spoke French and they went to church every Sunday. And by the 19th century, they didn't talk about being Native anymore. They were just French people because of the racism. Wasn't until the 90s, till the 1990s, that my French Canadian relatives would even allow you to talk about being part Native. The racism was so extreme. So the people around here never talked about that kind of stuff. I haven't talked about it for 150 years, maybe 200 years. You know, you want to be a half-breed? You want to be, that's what they called Métis people when I was growing up, was a half-breed, eh? You got to live over in the bad part of town with all the rest of the half-breeds. You want to be Native.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't a cool thing to be. People spent their lives getting away from Native heritage and Native backgrounds, and ultimately even from French-Canadian backgrounds. You know, all my relatives that live in Michigan, they spell their name G-O-N-Y-A. Gagné. You know, I'm very fortunate to have experienced French-Canadian culture and English-Canadian culture to such an extent. You know, it truly makes me an archetypal Canadian in many respects. I have other background, too, of course, though. I have quite a mix of backgrounds and cultures and traditions to draw upon. Obviously, growing up in my father's culture and society out in the county on a farm, the French-Québécois culture has been preeminent in its influence upon me beyond English Canadian or English American culture. But it is, even though I'm maybe like 40% French Canadian, I feel more like I'm like 80 or 90% French Canadian culturally speaking, even though I don't speak French very well. So this has always made me feel like I was missing something by not being able to think and talk fluently in French. My oldest daughter is fluent in French. She had her university degree is in French literature, actually. My middle daughter and my youngest daughter did not pursue French at all, so they don't really talk it very much. Again, I've always tried to talk a little bit of French to them. I always felt that the great failings is something that, on an unconscious level, that I held bitterly in my soul was the fact that my father is a man who never spoke a word of English till he was 15 years old, could not really speak fluent English until he was like 17, 18 years old, never spoke a word of French to me in his life. And why is that? That's because of racism, too. Imagine the experience he had in 1956, unable to speak a word of English and having to go to an English high school because the English bastards in this province did not allow the French to have high schools then. So he went from getting awards for his his proficiency in complex French grammar to having to learn how to say hello and have a bunch of 1956 racist English bastards bully and taunt and tease him for a couple of years, right? So when he had kids, he never spoke a word of French to them. I remember when he was working as a real estate agent, he seriously considered changing the spelling. His name is Luc, L-U-C. He seriously considered changing the spelling of his name to L-U-K-E because all the English people would call him Luck all the time.
Are you or your family plugged into the local Francophone community at all, like attending events or doing anything like that?
Not really, no. Well, aside from maybe the Gagné Trépanier family reunion in the summertime every year, and the Gagné Christmas family reunion between Christmas and New Year's, I get together with all my French relatives and we hang out and have dinner and that kind of thing. But aside from those two events, I have not been participating in any kind of French stuff aside from doing my radio show for a number of years now. Right. In part, I think it's an outgrowth of the pandemic. Since the pandemic, I don't really feel that social things have really caught up yet, even though it's been a couple of years now.
So March is the month of the Francophonie.
And so now,
do you have any big plans?
Oh, well, definitely I'm going to go visit my dad. My dad's birthday is in a couple of days. So I'm going to definitely go visit him and maybe I'll say a couple words of French to him, even though he won't say none back to me. You know, he comes from that old generation of people out in the county. You know, the 60s Cultural Revolution never really happened for those people. Studying French and learning about French and trying to embrace my French culture and background a bit more has been a wonderful experience for me. And it's really opened my mind up about things and about even just the nature of language and how we express things in English versus French. But it's been a good journey for me. It's brought me closer to myself and to my roots and taught me a lot about language. I certainly have no regrets about it. My only regret is that I didn't, you know, start this in earnest when I was younger, perhaps. Ultimately, my regret is that I didn't become fluent in French when I was a kid. But, you know, circumstances are what they are. You know, I have to be sympathetic and understand my father's psychology and where he was coming from at the time and be sensitive to that. And my mother's English, so I couldn't expect it from her. So, you know, circumstances were what they were. That's the way things go. Overall, it's been a really positive experience for me, and it's made me a better person trying to study French. You know, thank you so much for reaching out to me so that I could talk about this with you. It always makes me feel better to talk about it.
Well, it's my pleasure. It's such an interesting story, Christian.
That was my conversation with longtime community radio host Christian Gagné, a community radio volunteer who lives in Windsor, Ontario. This has been the RVF Franco Podcast 2026. Thanks for tuning in.
Since its inception in 2022, CFRC Power Plays has become the number one destination for all things Queens football.
And that is a touchdown for the Gaels!
With over 50 million lifetime views, CFRC Power Plays is the defining voice in Queens football coverage.
Looking for Nico Cuomo! Cuomo! My goodness! Nico Cuomo!
Follow us today on Instagram at CFRC Power Plays, your number one spot for rock solid football action.